If you need to contact Narcotics Anonymous or are interested in our sponsorship Behind the Walls program, please contact ARSC Regional H&I, P.O. Box 1351, Phoenix, Arizona 85001. NA literature can be found on the tablets in the Adovo app by searching for Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous does not endorse and is not affiliated with the tablet manufacturer, the software, or the institution.
My name is Ryan. I'm an addict. Welcome back to another episode of Recovery Discussions put on by the Arizona Region of Narcotics Anonymous. Today we have a special guest with us. His name is Christopher. Chris, did you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Chris. I'm an addict.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for being here today. We've been really looking forward to sitting down with you and having this discussion. So we're really grateful that you could make it today. We're going to sit down and we're going to talk a little bit about your story. You can share with us whatever you're comfortable with. And we'll just kind of get into it starting now. So, I've had the honor of knowing you for a few years and doing service with you. And I really thought that you've had an amazing and an inspiring story. And so I just kind of wanted to know, what was life like before you found recovery?
Yeah, life before recovery. I mean, I could take it all the way back to, childhood. I think that's a huge part of it as well. But first of all, I just want to thank you for allowing me this opportunity, just to share my message, and hopefully it reaches that one person. Growing up for me, childhood was great until it wasn't. Definitely grew up in a broken home. I became that kid that was left at home to take care of my brothers and sisters. So that was a life for me as a childhood. I would look at it as like not really having a childhood, and any type of sort of childhood, I kind of created on my own with my brothers and sisters. So I grew up very fast at a young age. I had that survival mode since then, growing up, because it was challenging, during those times, and having a mother that, turned to drugs and was just out of the home, and, leaving the kids at home. And I'm not just, I mean, here I am, like this 10 year old kid, left at home and getting pulled out of school just to babysit while the mother goes and, does what she wanted to do. At that time, I didn't realize that drugs were involved until I got older. And at the age of 15, I said I had enough, and I asked to move with my dad. And when I moved with my dad at the age of 15, it was very, very challenging to meet people as friends. So that's how, the first drug came into place is marijuana. It was a social drug at that time. So it was about the age of 18, 19, and got into meth about 21. And that's where the drug life started. And, had a lot of ups and downs, and, didn't realize anything about my addiction, didn't understand it. I just thought that was a lifestyle, and definitely the lifestyle that I chose. And, I was happy at that time, and didn't realize that my life would soon become unmanageable, and all the chaos and insanity that came along with addiction. Just never really looked at myself or drugs as being an issue. Definitely landed me, into county jail for the first time. Had all these arrests and charges, and just didn't know what to expect, and not even then is when I realized, hey, maybe I should change my lifestyle. And, got that slap on the wrist and just moved on. And, this life continued that way. No, I went to prison the first time. Even that time, I didn't really realize, like, hey, the lifestyle that I'm living, landed me in prison, and this is where I'm at. And it's just like I knew at one point, like, hey, maybe I shouldn't do meth anymore. I even told myself, like, well, I'll just smoke weed and just leave out the meth, But I remember, like, 1 week before, so after I got out of prison, 1 week before I was gonna get off of parole, an opportunity came up to get high, and what I learned, after I got into addiction, is when you tell yourself, I'm just gonna do this one last time, it never turns out to be that one last time. That's how it all started again. And I told myself that I was gonna just do it on the weekends, and then eventually got to the time where I needed to get through the work week. And I was back to getting high every day. And to go into 2011, this is where a life-changing moment happened for me. And during that time, I was faced with a diagnosis, and here I am finding out that I'm living with HIV at this time. And I went full force into using meth and drinking alcohol, and that was a very dark time for me, because I didn't have any other coping skills other than getting high. I never learned that, and I couldn't turn to my family because they didn't understand it. I barely understood it myself, living with this other disease, aside from my drug addiction, and I look back at that, and I had these two diseases that I'm living with, and I didn't know how to deal with it, growing up, in my childhood, I had gained that strength, and that survival mode at that, but it didn't set me up for, when I got the news of, hey, you got HIV, and I didn't know other than what I'd learned and heard growing up, like, I'm gonna die. And that's how I presented it to my family, and that's how I was living. And it was just a very dark time, and I masked it with my drugs, and I basically ran away from my family, ran away from myself, and I was just running and gunning back in my addiction. And
I got a question for you. So what led you to like how did you get the diagnosis? Like you just had a random doctor's appointment or were you going through some stuff and you went and all of a sudden you found out, or did you have some idea that something might be going on?
well, that's a good question. That's something I always share in my story as well, because for me, the way that it went down at that time, I was living in a small town. That's where my dad lives. So, my dad's house was a safe haven where I would go to every time I got in trouble, just to go reset. And so this is a town with a population of 2,000. And I remember I just had a lymph node behind my ear, and I went to the doc. I wanted to go to the doctor. The doctor said, "Hey, it's nothing. You just hear some antibiotics. Take them." And that's what I did. But I did research, because I didn't really have a knowledge of lymph nodes until I researched. And I was just scrolling all the way down and all the way to the end. It did mention HIV. Talked about STIs and stuff like that, but the main focus and what thing that stood out to me was the HIV. And I had never gotten a HIV test in my life, and I decided in this small town, it was a little clinic, small little clinic, went in, didn't think anything of it. I asked for the test, and I had to go back for my results. So I remember going in and sat with the doctor, and I remember the exact words of the doctor saying, "Hey, this is the first time I ever had to tell anybody this." And he gave me my results saying that I was HIV positive. And in that moment, I shut down and I cried, and I definitely felt alone at the time.
I can't imagine what it was like experiencing that and having to walk through that. Can you explain kind of like what those feelings were like, and did you turn? Did you like I think you said you dove deeper into your addiction as a coping mechanism, And I'm just wondering if that might have really set your addiction off on a stronger path.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that, like I had mentioned. But my feelings during that time was just scared. Because like I had also mentioned that the only knowledge that I had of HIV was that you're going to die. And so that's what I thought about myself. And it was during the holidays as well. So right before Thanksgiving and Christmas. And at that time, I thought it was best that I didn't present this to my family just because of the holidays. So during those few months, it was very challenging and very hard, and I just felt so alone. I couldn't even tell my family, you know. So I had like this deep secret that I'm holding on to, and no support, and not even, you know, from the doctor, because the doctor, I mean, in my eyes just gave me a pamphlet and said, you know, sent me on my way. Without any education, you know, without telling me, like, hey, you're gonna live, you get to live a full life, you just gotta take medications. You know, I didn't know that at the time. And, you know, and it wasn't until after the holidays passed and I was able to tell my family, and I felt like a little relief, but still they just didn't understand and they didn't know how to support me. So I still felt alone.
That's what I was going to ask next is how did they take it?
Yeah, they were supportive and understood, you know, where I was at, especially my siblings. But again, they just didn't know how to support me, even though they were supportive.
Right. So how long did you continue to use after your diagnosis? And then, what was the situation or situations that eventually, how did you find recovery and how did this kind of turn around for you?
Yeah, so like when I dove into my addiction, you know, after this diagnosis, you know, I was out there running and gunning, and I had just moments of, you know, when I would go see the doctor, you know, I would take medication sporadic, and it lasted about 4 years, just getting high and just feeling scared and alone and hiding. And I mean, I remember like my stepmom would tell me, you know, just come home, just come home. And I couldn't. I mean, I just couldn't. I didn't want to face my family. I just felt like I was going to be a burden. You know, I just didn't feel like anybody understood me because I barely understood what I was going through. So it wasn't until just this one moment that I would never forget. You know, like it was another time that I encountered the police, and it was just a random time. I was at a Circle K arguing with this other person over gas money, and at that time, you know, I was in survival mode and just barely holding my head above the water. And I let go whatever I was holding onto. Like I remember behind that police car, you know, handcuffs, sitting behind, in the back seats. I just let go. You know, I just didn't care if I went to prison again. I just wanted it to end. I mean, I was tired of running, tired of just trying to survive, because it was hard too, trying to keep a job and trying to keep a place and just living out of my vehicle and just couch surfing, just all those things were going on. But just this moment, you know, I finally let go, got arrested, and you know, I like to share this part of my story as well, because they had put me on house arrest, and I remember I had to go do a UA at TAS, so like the old building that was on 7th Street. They're in Phoenix, and I remember just downstairs, and just like any other time that I've been on probation, I thought I just had to stop for a little bit because I had to give them a clean UA, and you know, I was smoking meth and smoking weed, just like literally downstairs, like on the side of the street. You know, I knew I was gonna be dirty, so I was like, I was telling myself, you know, why not just smoke as much as I can, well, before I go. go drop this UA, and that was the last day that I got high. You know, that's where my clean data originated from, and it's just a gratifying moment that I never knew that that was going to happen. I never knew that that was going to be the last day that I got high, that that was going to be the start of my recovery and this journey. And it wasn't until 9 days after that is when I walked into my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, and I never left.
So let me get this. You dropped a UA after getting high. Obviously, it came back dirty.
Yeah.
And did they violate you, or did you not get violated?
No, I didn't get violated because they had already knew. I'm not
Mm.
sure the reason why they wanted me to do a UA, even though they knew I was on drugs. I'm not sure, but that's just how it happened, you know?
So, did you have to go back to prison at all after that?
Yeah, so unfortunately, during the period that I was waiting and going to court, knowing like, hey, I could face prison, may not face prison. They're telling me that maybe I'll get probation, and but this was during the time when I had discovered recovery, and going to meetings and learning about working the steps, working with the sponsor, a home group, all these things, and just life started happening during that time. So things started to change. I started to understand more about addiction, about myself, what to change. And I also learned about a higher power. That was the greatest thing because that definitely helped me with surrender. And I had to surrender the fact that, hey, I may be going to prison. And I did that. It was a good thing that I was able to do that, because it helped me just focus on recovery itself. And the day that I went to court, yeah, I got sentenced and taken. Got taken in, and at that time I didn't know what was going to go on with my recovery. I mean, like this, it was 4 months of recovery that I gained, by working the program. Like I legit worked the program. I wasn't just abstinent from drugs, and I went full force into recovery. I had 4 months worth of recovery, and then going into prison, and it's like, oh my gosh, like what's gonna happen now? Like now I gotta put recovery on hold. What's life gonna be like when I get out? And the greatest thing is when I hit the yard, my bunkie came up to me and said, "Hey, you want to go to a meeting tonight?" And I mean, I was like, wow, like there's meetings in prison, and that's where it started, and my recovery continued in prison, and it was like a little fellowship in there and little home group. Yeah, so I got to continue recovery and continue to go to NA meetings while in prison, and that was something I definitely did not experience my first time in prison. So it's a whole new view, a whole new lens, whole new perspective, second time in prison. But I'm so thankful for that time. I mean, of course, I didn't want to go to prison, but I'm still thankful because it gave me another opportunity just to build a relationship with my higher power as well.
So you were able to stay clean this whole time you were in prison this time.
Yes. Even though that many people may not know, there are drugs in prison. But yeah, I definitely got to stay clean, went in clean, and came out of prison clean.
right. So what are some of the things you did when you got out of prison to kind of maintain your recovery and to to work a program.
Well, it's just like, it's said, either you get out of an institution or, prison, go straight to a meeting. And, that's what I did. I just had to find my people, find my routine, just like I had at prison, of going to meetings. And it was a little bit different at the beginning. Even though I built certain relationships when I first got into the program, and I seen people that I recognize, it felt new again. But I was still able to plug in right away and got connected, and just continue to go to meetings. I reconnected with my my old sponsor and just kind of started where I left off before I went into prison.
Do you think that having a program like Narcotics Anonymous and STEPS and a fellowship to kind of rely on, do you think that that kind of helped you get into some acceptance with your diagnosis and instead and kind of help move you into the solution, out of the problem and into the solution?
Yeah, I would say more, most definitely, because through the program and working the steps, I was able to understand more about my addiction, and it gave me the confidence, and just the teaching in general of how to take care of myself, and it definitely was something that I needed to accept, because it was still something that, wasn't necessarily a secret, but it wasn't something that I openly shared about. Because when I first got into Narcotics Anonymous, I had to let go of my denial that I am an addict. And that was a huge relief, getting to tell my family, like, hey, I'm an addict, and this is what I did, and this is what I'm doing now. Because before it was always just deny, deny, deny. My dad would find, some paraphernalia. Oh, it's not mine. Somebody was in the car, they left it. Even though it was apparent that I'm high, and so, but this time, being honest and living just that honest program, I was able to be open about my addiction, and that really helped me to become open about my diagnosis as well. But I still wasn't fully there, and it wasn't until I heard another recovering addict share their story, and this was somebody that I had worked alongside for, like, who knows, like the past year or so, and I've never heard their story. I didn't know that they were also a person living with HIV until I heard their story in the rooms. And that was a moment that I gained the courage to start sharing my story. And that's how that's how it happened for me. So I'm thankful for Narcotics Anonymous and the people in recovery, people who share their stories, because that's exactly what helped me.
It's like the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. I heard it said,
Exactly.
you keep coming to meetings, listening to people share, and you may not have heard someone share your story yet, but if you keep listening, eventually someone's going to share your story, and it sounds like that's what happened.
Right.
I'm grateful it did. I know that you do a lot of things today, both in recovery and in society, and you have passion for certain topics and subjects, and you do a lot of things today to give back. I just want to know, what's life like now that you're clean? What are some things that motivate you, and what are some things that you're passionate about?
Yeah, so the motivation definitely, comes from my lived experience. Just being that person that felt alone and misunderstood, or not even understood at all, and getting into the line of work that I'm in now, I get to be that beacon for that person that, may either be struggling with addiction or maybe struggling with the HIV diagnosis. That's the type of line of work that I do. So I get to use that as a purpose in life now to ensure that no one, ever experiences, the type of darkness that I had went through during that time of my addiction and during the time of my HIV diagnosis. So I use that today. I feel like there's a purpose in me of just helping others. And that's where my drive comes from, and just doing work, outside of the rooms, and being there for others, and just giving back in so many ways. I'm grateful that I get to be this person today that gets to do those things, because I tend to look at myself, as like this meth addict, but doing this type of work now, and like, how did I get from there to here? And It was definitely a lot of work, and I'm thankful for Narcotics Anonymous, for giving me all these tools that help me to grow up and to just live life and accept myself. And there's so many components in recovery. It's I don't know. I mean, it's just gratifying of how NA works in general, and just seeing it other people and how so many give back. And so that's what I just wanted to do. I want to give back the best way that I can, because during my addiction, all I did was take, take, and take. And if people feel that I can help others, if it's just sharing my story, I'm going to do that.
I know that you do a lot of service work within our fellowship, and I know that you get to be, like you said, a beacon of light to people in the career that you've chosen and that you get to work in. But another thing I know that you do is you work with the unhoused population a lot, and I think that's such a great thing because some of us have really experienced homelessness. During our addiction, and I for myself found myself there for a little while in my when I hit bottom. And so, I just want to commend you for all the work that you do both inside the fellowship and outside the fellowship, because it really makes a difference, and your story I think really shows how someone can go from just a real place of darkness, and I don't know if it's hopelessness, but just a real dark place, and they can then take that and turn it into the motivation to really give back and do something good, not only for themselves but for society. And I think your story really exemplifies that. And so I really want to thank you for that. What are some of the things that you think? What is something, one experience that's really a positive experience that you've gotten to participate in? With when it comes to doing service within Narcotics Anonymous, do you have any particular situation or instance that really stuck out to you that really made a difference in your life as a result of doing service?
I would say, when it comes to doing service and just being involved in the community and the type of work that I do, because believe me, when it first started, I didn't have any knowledge of what the heck I was doing. Even when I first came out of prison and got into treatment, working there, it's like, I felt like a newcomer myself, and like, how do I help these people? And then getting to the line of work that I am now working for, the organization that I'm at now, is like, I'm surrounded by these people that have these degrees and this knowledge. And I got my GED in prison my first time, and I would never measure up. So it was countless times of telling myself, like, am I worthy? Am I worthy? But then I had to tell myself, like, I'm here for a reason. Like, I was chosen. People see something in me, you know what I mean? And I'm gonna go with it, even if I didn't know what the heck I was doing. Eventually I learned in the moment, and just applying that throughout life, throughout my recovery and the service that I come across, just like my current service commitment in public relations. I never thought that I would be in a subcommittee, or especially a chair. I was comfortable doing service work at a home group level, and here I am now. Just and it's just based off my journey, the experiences that I learned, just coming from different type of background and not that much educated, but I just had this drive and this passion. And I may not have the degree, but I do have the experience now that can take me far. And that's what I use. So whatever knowledge that I have, I put that to work, whether it's service within the fellowship or outside.
Nice. I think, before we finish up, I'd like to, if what would be some recommendations or what would be some words of encouragement that you might have for somebody who's been through something similar as you, or whether they're dealing with addiction or whether they're dealing with a diagnosis or whether they're dealing with incarceration. What would be some words of encouragement or suggestions or, that you would give to somebody who might be able to relate with your story?
Yeah, some cases, it could be simple, just like, keep coming back. But for me, it was just the change. It's, the journey itself is challenging. So anyone who's struggling the same way, just to know that there's someone else that been through the same situation. There's someone that been incarcerated, or someone that's also living with HIV, someone else that's dealing with addiction, and just really connecting with that person. The one thing that really helped me is just identifying with others and understanding, certain situations in life, like how do they deal with it, and just reaching out to those people. So it's mainly just getting plugged in and getting connected, knowing you're worthy. And just like empowering, because that self, that internal stigma can really hold you back. And the main thing is the courage. Is building that courage, because that courage can take you far. So once you stop worrying about what other people think of you, that will tend to fade away, and you get to focus on yourself and be your true self.
Awesome. Well, I just personally I want to thank you for participating in our recording today, and I want to thank you for the courage that you show by your openness and your willingness to share. I'm sure that you're going to continue to do wonderful things both inside our fellowship and outside our fellowship. And it's really been a privilege to get to know you better and to do service with you also. So with that being said, I want to thank you, Chris, and I just want to end it with that. So thank you for everybody who took the time to listen today. We hope to be able to put together some more recovery discussions for you. So keep your eyes open and your ears open for new episodes that might come out. Thank you, guys.
If you would like to speak directly with a member of Narcotics Anonymous, please contact our phone line at 844-991-AZNA. Again, that's 844-991-2962.